Salisbury. According to estimates, there are between 10 and 12 million inactive Catholics in the United States. In California, we found an organization willing to do something about it. They're attempting to reach these dormant Catholics in homes, schools, parishes, and now, even on the highway. If you happen to be on Highway 10 in Los Angeles, you're likely to run across a curious sign.
We've had the Resource Center really active in programs for about a year and a half now, and it's just been overwhelming. Like I said, we're busting at the seams. We have programs going six nights a week in the Catholic Resource Center. Because of demand, our speakers that are going out, we could book them every night. We have requests for them all week long to go out in the parishes. So it's a program that's really working very well.
The Catholic Resource Center is one part catechism class, one part Catholic bookstore, lightly coated with a medley of inspirational speakers. Throw in a great location, and you have some real drawing power.
What would first brought you in?
The sign is pretty big. You could see it.
The location of the center itself is the brainchild of Terry Barber, the president of St. Joseph's Communications. Chances are, if you've heard a Catholic audio tape, it was one of Barber's.
We do about 40 to 50,000 a month is what our average is. He runs about 1,000 tapes a day. They duplicate at about 16-to-1 ratio, so you're looking at about 1,500 hours of taping in one day that one operator can do.
Speed is of the essence at every point of production, just to keep up with the demand. In the other room, orders for new materials stream in all day.
God bless you. Thank you for calling St. Joseph Communications. Can I help you?
Priority.
Okay.
And there's plenty here to order.
This is the inventory of the tapes that we actually produce, like Salvation History with Scott Hahn. One of our most popular sets. We do, you know, a variety of tapes with Scott Hahn's Answering Common Objections, Bible studies, family conferences, how to get the most out of the Mass, just a tremendous amount of scripture tapes.
The library has ballooned to include more than 50,000 titles. One of the newest editions is a newly discovered series of talks by Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
We started with Bishop Sheen back in 1979.
How did that happen?
Well, Raymond, what we did is we asked permission through the propagation of the faith to take Bishop Sheen's Life is Worth Living records and to put them onto audio cassette. And they gave us permission to do that. And since 1979, we've been selling them, and there's tens of thousands of tapes sets that have gone out in the 19 years. This is the set. He basically covers the meaning and purpose of life in the teachings of the Catholic Church, and when people hear Bishop Sheen explain it, it's just so convincing that I had made a vow to put him on radio, which we did.
If Sheen was the inspiration for St. Joseph's Communications, Barber's father was the spiritual force that drove it forward.
That my dad got sick in the mid-80s when we used to do this apostolate work from my house part-time. I was in real estate, and when my dad got sick with Alzheimer's disease, I moved back home with my mother, built an apartment off the garage, and we took care of dad. But being the kind of person I am, I'm not someone that can sit. I decided that, well, while I'm here, why don't I call other Catholic apostolates and see if they have cassette tape needs? So we started doing books on tape, and I grew, quite a bit doing being home all the time. My dad would come out in the wheelchair, and I would make him part of the apostolate by saying, "Dad, are we going to make more Bishop Sheen tapes?" And he'd give me the signal and say, "You bet, son." And so we really pointed out how, dad was there while we were working. And even in his suffering, he always said that he would offer up his suffering for the good of the apostolate. As my wife tells me, she believes that my dad passed away 8 years ago now, but he did a tremendous amount of work spiritually to have the work that we're doing right now.
They are now taking that success to the next level, expanding the franchise by targeting a specific audience.
We're refining our concept to really deal with the families. We realize our Holy Father said it so well.
That you need specific
specific titles, of tapes that deal with, for example, it might be problems with raising kids or how to be a successful parent.
But audio and videotapes are not the only way to reach people. St. Joseph's Communications now wants to take its message directly to the Catholic parishioner. Which brings us back to the Catholic Resource Center and Jim McMillan.
The Catholic Resource Center is a concept right now. We have several speakers that are part of the Catholic Resource Center, and what they're doing is they're going out and helping parishes, making presentations. They talk about the sacraments. We're doing Bible study, prayer groups. And what we're doing is we're kind of filling in the gaps a little bit, if you will, for a lot of the parish needs.
Using their in-house speakers, the center works with the local parish to attract those hard-to-reach parishioners. Jesse Romero is one of the Resource Center's busiest speakers.
I'll be doing primarily outreach to the Latino community in Spanish apologetics and evangelization, and also to the first-generation Latinos, which my generation, oftentimes a lot of them are just really walking the tightrope because they don't really have that Latino Catholic culture any longer. It's been real watered down. It's Americanized. And when they come over here, I mean, they start kind of swimming from one church to another. So I'm also trying to direct my apostolate, my ministry, towards those first-generation Latinos.
Former Protestant youth minister Tim Staples now also works for the Resource Center.
I'm doing tapes and talks. I'll be in the parishes doing apologetic seminars. I'm going to be training evangelists as well to go out into the parishes. Real excited about that.
The Catholic Resource Center is already showing signs of success. Dan Woods, whom we met earlier, has been coming to catechism classes here for more than a year.
It got me back into the church. It started me back into the church. They gave me some tapes about Protestant ministers and other people, you know, getting into the Catholic Church, and I listened to them, and they gave them to me for free. They gave me a whole thing. It was worth about $30 or $40. And I started listening to that, and then I decided to start going to catechism classes, so it kind of got me rolling.
What we want people to do is be so on fire for their faith, so excited about their faith, that it just overflows, and I have to go share it.
Dan, the fellow you saw near the end of the piece, was so excited about his faith, he passed it on to his girlfriend, who is now attending classes at the Catholic Resource Center. As for the center itself, there are plans to expand it into a school for Catholic evangelists, complete with a campus setting. If you'd like to contact St. Joseph's Communications, they can be reached at 1-800-526-2151. When the World Over continues, Father Richard John Newhouse will tell us what really went on at the Synod for America in a moment.
Once again from our studios, Raymond DeRoy.
Synods are something we hear very little about in the mass media, yet they've been happening for centuries. A synod is a time for bishops of a region to come together and discuss, study, and reflect upon a given topic for about a month. The Pope normally joins them. Late last year, the Vatican hosted the Synod for America. Bishops from Canada and North and South America took part. There were so many issues touched upon and so many bishops present, it's hard to say what was accomplished. To help us unravel the synod and explain what it means to the future, we recently spoke to Father Richard John Newhouse, editor of First Things magazine. Father Newhouse was a participant at the synod and something more. Father Newhouse, I was surprised to learn, I thought you were merely an observer at the Synod for America. Tell us, first of all, why it was called the Synod for America and how you became a synod father.
Second question is easier to answer. The Holy Father appointed me a Synod Father. And how someone who's not a bishop becomes a full voting member of a bishop's conference, you better ask the Holy Father that. I don't quite understand it.
Okay.
But I was nonetheless very honored by the appointment and pleased to be there. As to why it was called the Synod for America, apparently that was very explicitly the Holy Father's wish. A Jesuit reporter friend of mine says it's simply because all of the atlases and geography books they have in the Vatican Library use that expression from the Middle Ages, just America. But I don't think that's an adequate explanation. I think it was obviously to underscore that there is one hemisphere, one continent, and that the church, the Catholic Church in this continent, should have an increasing and intensified sense of being one church and being interdependent.
What is your personal view? What do you come away with looking back on the full month of that synod?
Different aspects of it. I mean, as purely as a procedure, as something to go through for a month, it is for the most part very heavy-duty boring. But as many of us reminded ourselves, if the Holy Father could sit through all of this and thinks it's terribly important, obviously we should also see what it is that might be very important about it. And you do sense a meeting of the apostolic leadership of the church around the successor of Peter. And I think a lot of things happen in terms of understandings of North-South relations. A lot of things happened in terms of understandings of the cultural differences between North and South, and some of the differences that cut across the lines of Catholic-Protestant in both North and South.
Let's talk about some of those issues specifically. We'll run quickly through them. There was a lot of talk about forgiving debt in light of the Jubilee year. The North should forgive the debt of the South American countries. Your feeling of that suggestion?
I think the more it was discussed, the less emphasis was placed upon it during the course of the Synod.
Why do you think?
I think because people realized that that's only one small part of a much bigger complex of problems. And that if you, as Archbishop Samuel Carter of Jamaica, big, black, avuncular, lovely old man, he's now the retired Archbishop of Jamaica, he says, I do not think I can't give you a West Indian accent. It was very good. He said, I do not think we want to communicate to our ordinary people that we have changed our teaching that when you borrow money, you should pay it back. and he went on in that vein. But many others, Father Drew Christensen of the U.S. Bishops Conference was very helpful on this because he had some actual data and economic studies and so forth, demonstrating, among other things, and more Latin American bishops, as the Synod went on, said these things. They said, look, a reduction or a forgiveness of the external debt is not going to do anything about the internal corruption, political corruption, and the anti-business ethos within our countries that prevents people from really participating in the economic opportunities that are already there. Plus, as was pointed out by many, is that all these hundreds of millions of dollars that were borrowed, in total billions of dollars that were borrowed, never really got to the poor people. I mean, they got to, you know, all the top level and middle level oligarchy and political elite and so forth, who squandered the money, probably a good deal of it in Swiss banks and goodness knows where else. So that everybody, I think, by the end of the Synod, realized that just debt forgiveness or debt reduction is not the answer. Because then, you know, what are you going to do? Go and borrow a whole bunch more money and then 10 years from now go through the whole thing again? And all the time, nothing is benefiting the people who really most need it.
There was a great deal of talk, as you said earlier, about the unity of America. Is a true unity possible in light of the vast cultural differences between North and South America? And what do the bishops, coming out of this Synod, suggest to bring North and South together?
Well, cultural differences and economic and political differences, and they are very, very big indeed. And yet at the same time, of course, there is a merger of sorts willy-nilly going on just through the patterns of immigration. I mean, it's estimated that 25 to 30%, somewhere in there, of all the Catholics in North America, in the United States today, mm-hmm. are Hispanic immigrants, right. Of various sorts from Central and South America. Okay. And that will likely increase very substantially in the future. I think one of the things that was very helpful that came out of the Synod is that a lot of the Latin American bishops, and they said this in different ways, had not appreciated, number one, how large the Hispanic presence is in North America, mm-hmm. and how seriously the church in the United States particularly takes the challenge of pastorally ministering to this very, very large proportion of the Catholic population. Mm-hmm. So that I think that they were not aware of how much is being done in Hispanic ministries in a thousand different ways mm-hmm. all over the United States. Not enough, of course, mm-hmm. and all of us are challenged by that.
And regarding the United States, there was a lot of talk of materialism, perhaps an undue emphasis on materialism, ignoring the person and the dignity of the person. And we were labeled a Calvinist society. Can you shed a little light on that?
Well, yes. I think that having to do with the cultural differences, one of the most important contributions was made by Archbishop Francis George of Chicago, who is certainly one of the most intellectually astute bishops anywhere. He pointed out that the American ethos, going back to the beginnings, the Puritan beginnings, has been dominantly Protestant, and within that, dominantly Calvinist in its orientation. And that there are some very big cultural consequences as a result of that.
How does that manifest itself, in your opinion, that Calvinist tendency?
Well, I agree with what Archbishop George said, but as he and I had opportunity to discuss and have had over the years on different occasions, I would add that it's not just Calvinist, that in modern, in late 19th century, 20th century American history, it's also revivalist Protestantism, mm-hmm. which is not Calvinism, really. It's not Puritanism, it's not the Bay Colony of mm-hmm. Boston, etc. It's the southern Midwestern revival experience of a different way of being Christian. American religion is essentially Gnostic. That is, it's essentially, as a consequence of this revivalistic and New England transcendental tradition, Emersonian tradition, mm-hmm. it's essentially profoundly individualistic, profoundly, in an odd kind of way, anti-materialistic. That is, the body does not matter, matter does not matter. Mm-hmm. And obviously the community of the church does not matter, because one has this very private relationship to a Christ who is resurrected but not ascended. Mm-hmm. So you can, it's a very subtle point that I walk with Jesus step by step, hand in hand with Jesus, who's still kind of around here, the resurrected Lord. He has not ascended into heaven, and therefore does not need a church in order to mediate his presence. It's a very private, me and Jesus all alone kind of piety. Well, all of this is very different, needless to say, from Catholic piety and Catholic sensibilities about what the world's about.
So what do you think will be the enduring principle that will affect the lives of those of us who are Catholics here in America? Is there any one idea or principle that you see coming out of this Synod that will affect directly the lives of those of us here in America?
Well, what really comes out of the Synod will finally be articulated in the Holy Father's exhortation to America, which will likely be about a year from now, mm-hmm. and probably in Mexico City at the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I'll tell you, I think a difference, and for us in North America, that the Synod made, and we'll see the consequences of this, is to be aware of just how much of the church here in the United States now is Hispanic. Mm-hmm. And to realize that a great deal What was it Cardinal Bevilacqua said? I don't know what authorities he was quoted, but it was quoting, but it was a striking figure that in the year 2040, I believe, 60% of the population increase in the United States will be Hispanic.
Right.
We can view this as an enormous opportunity for the Catholic Church in the United States. To the degree that Anglo-Catholics, that non-Hispanic Catholics, view themselves as somehow still strangers and guests in an essentially Protestant America. This is going to make it more difficult for Hispanic immigrants, because they are going to be, as Archbishop George of Chicago said, increasingly viewing themselves as a minority within a minority church. To the extent, on the other hand, that Catholics, non-Hispanic Catholics, and Hispanic Catholics together are able to articulate the richness of Catholic teaching and life and spirituality, and to infiltrate that fully into the culture of the American experiment. To that extent, it is not inconceivable that we will see in the next century and I don't say this in any triumphalistic sense, in the pejorative use of the term triumphalistic, but a development of a distinctively Catholic culture, more Catholic culture, here in the United States, and one that will be both welcomed by and welcoming to non-Catholic Christians.
The Pope is scheduled to deliver his apostolic exhortation, or summary of the Synod, next January in Mexico City. We want to thank Synod Father Newhouse for his insight and wisdom. Well, that's all the time we have, but if you have a story idea or comment, be sure to email us at EWTNnews@EWTN.com or write us here at the network. We're also on the internet with the latest news of the day at www.EWTN.com. Just click on news. Until next time, we'll be scouting the world over to bring you all that is seen and unseen. For all the staff and crew of EWTN News, I'm Raymond Arroyo.